supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Well, as families age, lots of things happen. Roles are redefined, values are revisited, and sometimes revised. How do we navigate the waters when, say, the matriarch or the patriarch in the family can no longer take care of themselves, let alone the rest of the family? Unlike family businesses, families rarely have a succession plan, and probably should. But depending on the nature of the family, these transitions are made sometimes with ease, but often with guilt and conflict and power struggles. And all of that depends on what we family therapists call our family dynamics, our operating system. So on today's show, we're going to take a look at families' operating styles and how that impacts on how we make these difficult transition as our elders age and need more care. My guest is Kathy Piercy. She's an associate professor of family, consumer, and human development at Utah State University. She's a former social worker with 20 years clinical experience. And her new book, Working with Aging Families, is due out today. Kathy Piercy, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Dan.
And congratulations on your new book.
Thank you. It was a labor of love.
Really?
Really. It really combines the clinical work I've done over the years with the research that I conduct on aging families. So it does go a little bit beyond what I've experienced, but it was really enjoyable to write.
That's great. And you call yourself a former social worker. Is anything like a recovering social worker? Is that how that works?
Somebody asked me that recently.
Did you get sober or something?
That's funny. No, during the years I was a practicing clinician, I began teaching at a local college, and I enjoyed the academic process so much that I decided to go back to school, get my PhD, and become a full-time professor. So even though I don't practice anymore, I conduct the type of research that allows me to interview families and still gain an understanding of their lives without actually providing them with counseling.
Well, I want to get to your book and some of your research. First, I want to tell our listeners that later in the show, we're going to hear from Katie McDonough. She's of Capitol Hill Village in Washington, D.C. The village she's from is a volunteer-based program that offers assistance to older adults who want to live independent lives. It's a fascinating program, and we'll hear about that later in the show. We'd also like to hear from you, our listeners. Our number is 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. We're talking about aging and families, and that's something that touches us all. So if your family doesn't have a succession plan and you feel you need one, give us a call. If you've got an aging family member, or if you are an aging family member, we'd love to hear from you. That's 888-477-9499. Well, Kathy, aging is something we don't do well in this culture. We generally don't talk about it. We don't respect the gifts of our elders, and more often than not, the elders themselves don't see themselves as a valuable asset to our culture. Is this just about fear of death? Is that the underpinnings?
I think that's part of it. None of us really likes to think about our mortality, especially as we move into our middle ages, whatever that may be these days, and it can be different for different people. But we have signs all around us that suggest to us on a daily basis that being young and feeling young and doing young people things is the best way to function. And that's just not realistic as we get older in some cases. But because those messages are there, whether they're media-driven or just in terms of how we're treated on a day-to-day basis, I think it does make it difficult for people to embrace being old and recognize that they still have contributions to make. There are some people who still do that, though, and I've recently conducted some research with older volunteers that reinforces that idea that you can still make a contribution regardless of your age.
Yeah, and it's more than just a physical contribution. You know, I've written a couple books to my grandson, Sam, who's on the autism spectrum, but I've gotten kind of ingrained in the perspective of grandfather, and people come to me with their grandfather stories. And one of the things that elders bring, and I get this from people, one of the things elders bring is a broader perspective. You know, when we're young, we have a very narrow focus perspective and think that this moment, this crisis or catastrophe is the moment, or, you know, or our egos are screaming that it's me, me, me. And our elders, you know, they bring that perspective, that wisdom, that,
right,
that we don't acknowledge. We don't know, really. We don't get to know.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say that older people have a wealth of experience to draw from. And it's that experience, whether it was learning from the school of hard knocks or succeeding at something they didn't believe they could actually do, that I think feeds into exactly what you're
right,
saying.
Exactly. I'm going to talk about our change in culture for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
My godfather is 95 years old. And living in his apartment, his daughter just retired. She's in her late 60s. His granddaughter just sent his great-grandson off to college. So who takes care of who, and when did the sandwich generation become a double-decker?
Well, it depends. The first question, the answer depends on who has the resources in the family and who is healthy and who is not. In my book, I talk not only about younger generations caring for older ones, but I also talk and write up scenarios in which older generations are caring for younger generations. So the pendulum can go both ways. Research tells us very directly that in many, many families, it's the older generations who are supporting the younger generations, sometimes financially, often emotionally, in terms of helping them out with children or grandchildren. And so that often goes on until an elder is quite old and begins to have difficulty functioning on his or her own. So that's how I would respond to your first question.
Well,
probably need to hear the second one again.
Well, it was about the sandwich generation.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a phenomenon, I think. For one thing, it's probably gone on longer than it's been written about or discussed. But because people are living so much longer than they were, say, 60 years ago, people are having children later in life than they used to on average. You have a situation whereby you've got an older adult, a grandparent or even a great-grandparent living, as you said, even into their 90s, while children or grandchildren are entering college or still in high school. And so that combination of having children later in life coupled with the fact that people are living longer is really what's created a sandwich generation.
Let's talk about family dynamics. You talked about it in your book, and I alluded to it in the beginning of the show. So all families develop patterns of functioning over time. So some are close and loving, some are close and suffocating, others are more distant and less emotional. So give us an idea about family dynamics and how it plays out across a life cycle.
All families develop some customary patterns of interaction, and that includes the way they communicate with one another, how much they see each other, how much tension there is that exists over time. And so people will develop over time kind of a pattern of being close to certain members of their family, less close to other members of their family, or even ambivalent about a parent or parents. Divorce plays a role in this, depending on how the divorce was handled, how involved the non-custodial parent was after the divorce. We know, again, that divorced dads who detach from their biological children fairly early in life are, unless they're remarried at the time they are in need of help, are least likely to get help from their biological children because there's been a rift over time and a lack of communication. But there are lots and lots of family configurations that may bring some families to the point of needing therapy. And there are families with multiple siblings, some of whom get along well with each other, some of whom don't. And then there are decisions that have to be made among those siblings when a parent needs help.
I also want to get to family styles within these different structures. Let me reintroduce you, and I also want to begin to get to our callers, too. We're talking with Kathy Piercy. She's an associate professor of family, consumer, and human development at Utah State University, and her book is called Working with Aging Families. That's what we're talking about. And our number is 888-477-9499. Let's go to the phones. We've got John on the line. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Good morning, Dan. And I'm not dealing with aging parents. Both of them have passed away. But the consequences of poor planning on my father's part before he passed away. We have a family business and an estate, and I foresaw before he passed away that there might be problems because of the planning that I saw he had in place, and tried to open the subject up, but was unable to for many reasons. But and some financial planner mentioned that my father's generation was, just his personal style or generational style was like, it was his thing. He did it, and he's going to do it his way. And, so as a consequence, we have incurred lots of lawyer's fees and animosity. And I guess the lesson that I've learned and going to pass on is that I'm going to be very explicit with my two children and about my wishes and try and make as little possible friction or, have the planning in place that will keep them from, having the same issues that my family is dealing with now.
Can I ask you how old you are? How old your children are?
I'm 61, and my kids are in their mid-20s.
Is your plan in place now? Do they know it now?
I've got some, some planning, but like I said, it's a difficult subject to bring up with people. So, but the more I go through this process that I'm going through now, impels me to, like I said, be more specific and have a sit down with both of them.
Yeah. Do your children know about what you want? Not just your estate, but do they know about what you want with your life as you age in terms of care?
Well, that's a good question, too. I feel like a lot of times they probably know less about me than I would like them to know, and you know, that's pretty much directly on me. So I you know, I'm going to try and you know, communicate this story that of my life to them, you know, in that respect. So it's a process that I, you know, it's difficult for me because I didn't have the model, you know. I can intellectualize the process, but you know, sometimes I struggle with the implementation, as it were.
Well, let me if I can keep you on the line just for another minute, because I just got a tiny little brainstorm here. So,
sure.
What do you want of your children as you age?
Actually, I don't want them to go through what I'm going through. So I would like them to be friends with each other. There's only two of them, so they've been pretty close growing up. I would like them to be friends and not have to battle over material things that you know, that I'm having to battle with now.
And if you need be, would you like to go in assist? Would you like them to put you in assisted living? Would you like to care them to care for you in your home?
I tell you, Dan, that's you know, I'm in that age bracket where that thought process is you know, it's right on the horizon, and I don't want to go into assisted living. I don't know. I'd like to go out with a bang, I think. I've dealt with aging parents and aging friends' parents and uncles and aunts in assisted living, and if it's in my power, I would not. And I haven't communicated this with them, and hopefully I have a few years before I get there, but I don't even want to think about being in that situation.
So here's the sum and substance of that tiny little brainstorm I referred to earlier. Why don't you and your kids sit down and listen to this show?
Well, I could send them the link. They don't.
Yeah.
They're not close at hand, but I have in the past sent them links, your archive links, when, you know,
well, this
when, and I thought it was appropriate. So I would certainly, send them the link and ask, and, you know, suggest that they listen to it and at least then, you know, start the conversation.
Yeah, well, you already did start the conversation, and you did a pretty good job of it, John.
Or continue with it, okay.
Yeah. All right.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. So, Kathy, you there?
I am.
Yeah, I kind of cut you off during that conversation, and I'm sorry for it. But, boy, we really heard so much there from John about, you know, despite the lesson he learned, how difficult and uncomfortable it is to bring this up.
It is. It is. I think we see ourselves day to day getting in there, doing our jobs, trying to do the best we can. And until we have an experience like John did, we don't think a whole lot about what might have been different here. How can I plan for my own aging process? How can I prepare financially? How can I prepare health-wise? There are advanced directives that are available. There are ways that attorneys and financial planners can set up our estate so that children are not left with an argument over the estate when there is an estate. And in terms of what John mentioned, he mentioned that the children are not close by, and this is not at all uncommon anymore.
Sure.
People often are trying to care for an aging parent at a distance, which is quite challenging under the best of circumstances. And so there oftentimes comes a painful moment where the family has to make a decision about who's moving closer to whom and who will have to give up something in order to make the situation work.
Kathy, we've got to take a short break, but I want to ask you, when we come back, can we talk about how to do that or how to plan for that in advance, so
right.
it's not a crisis when it happens.
Absolutely.
We're talking about aging families. What implication is for all of us? Issues of power and control and changing roles and the difficulty making plans and the implications when we don't. My guest is Kathy Piercy. She's an associate professor of family, consumer, and human development at Utah State. Her new book, Working with Aging Families, is due out today. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got an aging parent or you are an aging parent, tell us what you would like of your children, or perhaps you've recently lost a parent and would like to share with us what you learned, the good news and the bad news. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
WHYY is proudly supported by the Cooper Heart Institute, where doctors perform a life-saving procedure in cardiac arrest patients. The process, known as therapeutic hypothermia, lowers the body's temperature to 93 degrees and is instrumental in saving vital brain functions. Currently, Cooper doctors have used therapeutic hypothermia to help more than 100 cardiac arrest patients in South Jersey. For information on how Cooper advances medicine in South Jersey, cooperhealth.org/numbers. Or 800-8-COOPER.
One, two, three, four.
When it comes to new music, New York and L.A. get all the attention. But real rock fans know that there are great scenes all over the country.
So on the next Sound Opinions, we're taking a summer road trip to three American cities coast to coast. We'll find out what's happening in music in their neck of the woods.
Join Greg Kot and me, Jim DeRogatis, as we hit the road this week on Sound Opinions.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are talking about what happens to the family as they age, how do roles and relationships change, and what can be done to make that transition easier. I'm talking with Kathy Piercy, an associate professor of family, consumer, and human development at Utah State. Her book, Working with Aging Families, is out today. We're also going to be joined by Katie McDonough of Capitol Hill Village in the nation's capital. The Village's volunteer-based program. It offers assistance to older adults who want to live independent lives. Katie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And our number is 888-477-9499. If the line's busy, our lines are filled at the moment. Please be patient and try again. Katie, just tell us briefly about Capitol Hill Village.
Capitol Hill Village is a part of, it's a new model in aging to help older adults stay at home throughout their lives. And it's a model that is coming up on its 10-year anniversary. It started in Boston with Beacon Hill Village and has moved throughout the country, where Capitol Hill Village is now one of over 150 villages throughout the country that's at some point of development or already providing services. We provide a variety of services, anywhere from transportation to doctor's appointments to medical advocacy for our members, to changing a light bulb or helping people prepare for a lot of these decisions that you all have been discussing today.
Mm. Kathy Piercy, before we took our break, we talked about early planning and what can be done to avoid all of these conflicts that people run into as people age. So what would that look like?
Well, there are several things that ideally should be in place. Those are the advanced directives that I mentioned before. They are of two kinds, medical and financial. In the medical realm, you want to have a living will. And so speaking to the aging members of the audience, it's very important that you do this. You've been introduced, if you've had any hospital procedures, to the idea of a living will. That tells people what kinds of medical intervention you want in the event of your incapacitation. You also want to appoint someone in your family or a close friend to be the medical power of attorney. That is the person that can make decisions for you when you become incapacitated.
And I would imagine that if it's one of your children, that would be good to happen after a discussion with all of your children.
Absolutely. Some parents will identify which child they want and simply approach that child. But ideally, it would be great if a parent would sit down with all of their children and explain the rationale for their decisions. It often is more of a parent's decision than a child's decision or a volunteer sort of experience, but it could be that, depending on the family. Many families now are only having one child, and so obviously there isn't a lot of choice to be made in those situations. In terms of financial advance directives, you also need an updated will, as well as having a child or other family designated as someone who can handle your financial matters when you become incapacitated or unable to
do so. That's a discussion that really has to happen earlier on about what's in the bank, what you want, what it means to you,
right.
who you want to have what, and why. You know, I find Kathy Piercy and Katie that as a family therapist, that people are much more comfortable talking about sex and all sorts of other very private aspects of their lives. But when I say to them, how much money do you have in the bank and how do your finances work, they get very tense. You know, like that's the last bastion of secrecy.
Right.
And this is something that's got to be talked about.
Well, I think here's another way to look at it. From the point of maintaining control until you no longer, or until your life is over, by doing these advance directives and having them in place, talking with your family members about what your wishes are, you actually have a better chance of seeing your life lived out the way you want it than if you keep everything secret until close to the very end.
Yeah.
When people become have dementia, they eventually have to give up those powers, even though they may not want to.
Yeah.
There just simply is no choice in the matter. So why not approach it from the standpoint that I'll be in charge by making these arrangements and letting my family know what it is that I want.
Power and control is really the underpinnings of a lot of these difficulties. Katie, I want to turn to you. And, you know, the phrase we've all heard over and over is, I don't want to be a burden on my family. We hear it from every senior or almost every senior and near senior. It's understandable. What can be done about that?
Sure, we hear that a lot, and I specifically, as a social worker here at Capitol Hill Village, hear that from our members on a daily basis. And it's really exciting to hear you talk a lot about preparing in advance, because that is one of the major programs that we teach around here through the Village. It's called our Be Prepared Agenda. And that agenda covers a lot of the things that you have talked about here today, whether it be legal documentation or, you know, other documentation that's needed to communicate what it is that we want as we grow older and as we become unable to make those decisions. But I think one of the things that we really, really stress with families, whether they're locally family members or family members who are spread out across the country, is to have these conversations. because a piece of paper is a piece of paper is a piece of paper. But we remember these conversations that we have with our family members, which gives us a little bit more ease when it's time for younger children and other family members who are making decisions to actually follow through with the desires of their family members. So Be Prepared is something that we discuss monthly. We provide programming, and it really allows our members to communicate what they want to happen and what roles different people will play. And the village serves as a means where members can rely on other people in their community as opposed to continually asking. We do the asking for our members, and we assure that our volunteers are there.
Yeah, I want to get to specifics about how that works, because the organization itself is really fascinating to me. But I want to come back to this issue of the conversation and just weigh in on that before we go to the phones. So, you know, we've talked about estate planning and we've talked about living will, but I would like to see the conversation expand even further and talk about the issues that Kathy Piercy and I talked about in the first question, about life and death, about what's it like to be aging and what are your fears and what are your nightmares and what are your wishes and what's it like for you adult children, you know, to watch your mother or father or both as we age and begin to lose some control, and have that discussion early. And that's a very difficult discussion to have. And I think once that's on the table, then I think these other discussions might be easier.
I would agree with that. I would agree. And I would just add that in some cases, families may need a formal sit-down discussion, and they may be close enough to each other that that can happen. In other cases, it may be a more informal opening that a parent may give to a child in discussing, say, a close neighbor or friend's demise and how they handled it. And, you know, therefore the child is listening and thinking, I wonder if this would be an opportunity to ask you about what you're thinking about those things.
We have a lot of callers on the line. Let's go right to the calls. We've got Charlie. Charlie, hi, you're on the Voices.
I'm from a what I term dysfunctional family. We were raised in a strict Eastern Orthodox religion or heritage. And back in 06, my dad passed away. My mom is 86. And from even before my dad passed away, my relationship with my older sister, who is now 60, is strained. I'm 57. I haven't spoken with my older sister in 3 years. My younger sister, who was 47, hasn't had a job in 3 years, is in deep credit card debt, is a hoarder. Her 17-year-old daughter has no direction and is in her senior year and going to be, you know, maybe going to college in a year. And I think we learned to deal with these things, each of the siblings and the two parents, and we learned to go along dysfunctionally. Once one of the pieces is taken out, like my dad, things fell apart. And
when did your dad die?
Like my younger sister, if she needed a house, he would buy it. She ruined the house, he'd buy her another one.
Ah. So what happened when he died?
Well, you take a piece out of the equation, and yeah, now things fall apart.
So he's not protecting her anymore.
And I can't do it, and I won't, because I won't enable
right.
her. My old, who was a elementary school principal, she's got total control of the estate and trusts, and she's not giving out any money.
So let's back up. Let's back up a little bit. What if you could have had a conversation earlier on, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? What would it have looked like?
It might have worked, but even recently, like 5 years ago, I've said to my older sister, I've written to her and said, let's fix the problem, and the only way I'm going to do it is with a third, neutral third party, you know, some kind of therapist.
I hear your frustration, but just stick with me, Charlie.
Sure.
If your father, mother, if all five of you had come together 20 years ago, what's the discussion that needed to happen so that you could have avoided all this? 20 years ago.
Why do you have to control everything? Let us make our mistakes and let us live our life, is what I would have been saying.
I see. So you've been angry about your dad's being overprotective for a long time.
I've started to get over it since my dad passed away.
Yeah, well, it's funny. You know, this is exactly what Kathy addresses in her books about, and you make the point better than I ever could, Charlie, about how family dynamics get played out over time and how aging families, you know, it just gets exacerbated that much more. Thanks so much for your call, Charlie. Kathy, is that kind of what you're hearing?
Yes, it is. I think that Charlie has a very difficult situation to handle, in that the relationship among the siblings seems to be more strained than it is cohesive. And he seems to be willing to try to do something about it, but is struggling with what the best way.
Yeah. We've got to take a short break. When we come back, I want to go right back to the phones. And Katie McDonough, I want to hear much more about your program also. We're talking about aging families today on Voices of the Family. That's the voice we're listening to now. What it's like for everybody in the family as the elders age and die, what we can do to make that transition easier and more smooth. My guests are Kathy Piercy. She's an associate professor of Family, Consumer, and Human Development at Utah State. Her book is called Working with Aging Families. We also have on the line Katie McDonough of Capitol Hill Village in the nation's capital. It's an innovative, fascinating, and very successful new program. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY FM.
WHYY wants to help you capture your personal stories and family histories on video for your kids and grandkids to enjoy. The Doris H. Hamilton Public Media Commons gives even newcomers a chance to learn video production skills from professionals. You might be surprised how fun and easy it can be to share your stories through digital media. Create a digital scrapbook or preserve family memories. Visit whyy.org/Hamilton Commons to learn more.
Women in Hip Hop, a BET documentary claims to unveil the truth behind the industry with prominent MCs like Trina breaking it down.
It's a part of the game. It's a part of who you are as a woman, and you must have glam. I would not go nowhere without it.
The documentary, My Mic Sounds Nice, next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. We are talking about aging families today and the family dynamics of what happens to us as we age. My guests are Katie McDonough. She's of Capitol Hill Village in the nation's capital, and it's now expanded to many cities throughout the country, including this one. I'm also joined by Kathy Piercy. She's an associate professor of Human Development at Utah State. Her book is called Working with Aging Families. Katie, one of the most difficult conversations I had was when I had to talk with my mother about not driving anymore. Mm. And, you know, to this day, she was angry at me and she thought she could still drive. You know, to this day, I wish the Department of Motor Vehicles had a mandatory driving test for people over 65 or even 60. You know, how do we have those conversations? And Kathy Piercy, I'd like you to weigh in too. How do we have those conversations with our parents when they see themselves differently than we see them, when they're living alone and cooking and you know, we worry about the gas being left on or remembering their medication? These conversations are agony, and I know most adult children postpone this discussion beyond when they should.
Yes, that's one of the things that we really encourage our members here to do. We've actually done some programming around making a driving plan, writing out a driving plan, discussing that driving plan with your caregivers, whether they're children or other family members.
What's that look like?
It really lays out what are some of the signs, what are the steps that you see as an individual. What are some of the things that would make you feel uncomfortable being on the road, and clearly stating those to the family member, and then finally, what would be the event, the types of events that would make you want to hand over the keys to your children, and then putting something like Capitol Hill Village in the mix of choices for members. We then step in as transportation, and this isn't driving Miss Daisy. This is these are neighbors riding alongside neighbors, and through that process, building relationships with each other. So there isn't kind of a serve or be served kind of mentality. It's more of a relationship building activity.
All right. Let me. I wanted to get to the phones, but you've brought volunteering up a couple of times now, and I want to understand how that works. Volunteers are great, but they often burn out, you know, and there's turnover. Mm-hmm. So what do volunteers do? How do you get them? How do you keep them?
We are very blessed to be in a community that is historically volunteer-based. So to be honest, we have not had a whole lot of trouble having people walk through the door and say, I want to volunteer. Most of that happens through word of mouth. But I will tell you that one of the policies we've instituted here, it's called our Just Say No policy. This is to avoid the very problems with volunteers that we see time and time again. It's burnout, it's turnover. We call once for a volunteer, we email once. If someone says no, we move on. At this point, we're able to do this easily. We have over 170 volunteers serving 350 members.
What do they do?
They do anything you can imagine. You can. We have folks that go in and do friendly visiting. Like I've said, transportation is our most popular service here. We've even had a volunteer escort one of our members to a dance because it was in the evening and she didn't want to go. So we had one of our 20-something male volunteers who went along with her to make sure she made it there safe, enjoyed herself, and got home again.
Katie, we've got someone holding on the line. I don't think we're going to get to her call. It's Helene, who's a geriatric care manager, and I used a geriatric care manager for my parents. They lived about an hour away from me, and I couldn't get there. And oh my God, was it a wonderful experience for me. It's you know, they took the weight of the world off my shoulder. But do some of these volunteers serve that function?
In some ways, depending on their skills and talents, we have people who have experience in case management and social work that can come alongside members. But we have folks that a lot of times serve as, they become, you know, surrogate members of the family at times, and become close to the adult children and particularly those children who are far away, they can help and serve as a link in communication and here on the ground where the older adult member is.
Katie, how can someone reach you?
You can certainly visit our website at www.capitalhillvillage.org. On that website is all of our contact information.
That's great. That's great. I ask you that because we've got lots of calls, and I want to squeeze on as many as we can before we go. Let's start with Nancy. Nancy,
oh, hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling because today my parents are moving into assisted living from their home, and I'm on my way up there to greet them at the new place. I have a brother and two sisters, and I'm 54 years old, and I guess if I'm only going to go down to one subject, it was interesting that my father, and both my parents are still alive, and my mother has dementia, but my father has physical disabilities, and he is still mentally alert. He, when it comes to getting rid of the things in the house, because we need to liquidate the house, my brother wanted to sell everything, and a bunch of uncomfortable emails went back and forth between us. And in speaking to my father, I knew he wanted to give some things to the grandchildren. And so it became where my father really had to assert himself and tell all of us that he wanted to give these things to his grandchildren. And I guess if we had had this kind of conversation before this, it wouldn't have been uncomfortable. And now that they're going to be in assisted living, between the four of us, we need to liquidate the house. And that's going to be a project, and nobody's really in charge. And, you know, we're in the midst of it.
Hmm. Let me ask another question unrelated. How was this day for you?
How was this day for me?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm a little shaky, and some of your comments have brought, you know, a lump in my throat. And I've cried on and off the last few weeks, and so have my sisters and my brother. And we're all within driving distance of my parents, so actually we're all going to be there today. And my sister sent an email about my dad going to church yesterday for the last time, and that made me feel teary-eyed.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, I'm dealing with it, but, you know, I have my own coping skills, and it's not perfect, but I'm dealing with it.
Hmm. Well, I do wish you the best. I wish your parents the best. These are sad and difficult times for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Please take care.
Thank you.
Kathy Piercy, I said these are sad and difficult times for everyone. Is there a way to make them less sad, less difficult?
The transitions are always stressful, and this is a major transition for this family. I think there are some things I talk about in more detail in the book about when a parent goes into either assisted living or nursing home care, meeting with the staff, trying to give the staff information that will help make the transition more comfortable, both for the adult children as well as for the parents.
Mm.
And so a staff that is willing to listen and to learn more about their new family, if you will, that can be very helpful. I think the other issue she raised about liquidating the home and trying to figure out who's in charge, that family needs to keep in mind that there's a common goal here, and that is honoring the parents by doing the best they can in this process of liquidating. And keeping the common goal or the prize, if you will, in front of you, I think will help people realize that they are in this together and that it's not about them, it's about doing this job.
Right, right. Let's go back to the lines. We've got Kevin on the line. Hi, Kevin.
Hi there.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Well, I guess one question I had is my father died a few months ago, and, you know, I'm finding in my relationship with my mother now, you know, I know she doesn't go to the doctor and stuff like that, and I'm really having that instinct to want to control everything. You know, I want to jump right in there, and, you know, I even, like, sort of asked her the other day if, you know, for my birthday, I mean, for my Christmas present, if it would be for her to go to the doctor and just get a checkup.
Kevin, what's the emotion that drives you to do that?
Not wanting to lose her, like, just deep, deep fear.
Any other emotion besides fear that you're feeling towards your mother?
I guess just a little upset that she just wouldn't do basic things that are at her disposal to take care of herself.
Let me do a true-false. Do you feel closer to her, more loving, more tender?
You know, I did a little bit after my father died, but then I've also, for instance, I was with her the other day, and I actually felt more angry with her.
Yeah, yeah. That's, of course, the underpinning of the anger is the anxiety. It makes sense. Why don't you have a conversation with her about your emotions, about what her, your feelings about her and you, what shifted in the wake of your dad's death. Find out about her feelings, about her independence, and what her life feels like in the wake of her husband's death.
Actually, they had been divorced for a while, but no, I think I've been going in that direction.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about who she is, who you are now, and you know, and don't get so hung up on things. I've got one final quick question, and that's to you, Kathy. You talked a great deal about compassion in your book. Is that the underpinnings? Is that what we've been talking about this hour underneath it all?
I think a lot of our relationships with family members are need compassion. Compassion needs to be a part of the process.
And one
hurt as they age, physically.
One of the things we heard from Kevin is that the underlining of a lot of this anxiety really is compassion, and compassion can cure anxiety. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank you both so much for being on the show and for the work you do. My guests have been Katie McDonough and Kathleen Piercy. Piercy is an associate professor at Human Health and Development at Utah State University. McDonough is director of community and social services at Capitol Hill Village in Washington, D.C. Well, if you want to reach us, we're at voices@whyy.org. And if you want to reach me, I am at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Bob Alls. Thank you, Bob. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is our executive producer for audio content. Sherry Siegel's our intern. Mike and Scott's our executive producer and directed today's show. Jennifer Lynn's our producer. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.
This is W.